I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, starting May 6th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The circular conveyor belt at Kathmandu's Tribhuvan International Airport is chaos. Passengers returning from Qatar elbow for room to grab their cellophane-wrapped suitcases and battered cardboard boxes filled with expensive and hard-to-get stuff like flat-screen TVs, mobile phones, and designer clothes. But in this clamor, you'll find another type of traveler. Eyes swollen with grief, clutching crumpled tissues, reaching into the jumbled mess of luggage to claim something far more precious. The big wooden boxes they reach for are sometimes a light beige color. Other times, they're painted a bright red. They all have the same word stamped on the side. Human remains.
We've got coffins coming home every day. More than a worker per day on average is dying.
It's a scene you'll see repeated in airports across Asia and Africa.
FIFA's alleged tradition of bribery is taking a real human toll.
Ever since the tiny, oil-rich nation of Qatar was awarded the World Cup in that sham election back in 2010, millions of migrant workers have fled the soul-crushing poverty of Nepal, Kenya, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, the Philippines, and countless other countries for jobs building Qatar's World Cup stadiums, new roads, and tourist hotels. But opportunity has come with a deadly price. In the last decade, thousands, yes, thousands of these temporary workers have died. Their families left to scuffle with tourists to retrieve their remains.
The Guardian found that over 6,500 migrant workers have died in Qatar since the country was awarded the contract for the 2022 World Cup.
More than 6,500 people, just regular people trying to make a better life, killed while working in Qatar. It's hard to wrap your head around a death toll that large. And If you can believe it, that staggering number might even be larger. The exact number of workers killed in support of the 2022 World Cup isn't truly known. Because Qatar, FIFA's World Cup partner, refuses to release the information. The Guardian newspaper, which initially compiled the list of deaths, only had death records from five countries: India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka. Many other countries in Africa and Asia refused or were unable to provide the data. So it's almost certain the total is higher. But the scale of the deaths should be world-shaking news on its own. And I guess the average soccer fan hasn't even heard about it. I'm Connor Powell. This is episode 12, Qatar 2022. By listening to this series, you now understand FIFA's dark history. Its racist origins, its misogyny, its coziness with authoritarian regimes, its singular pursuit of profit, its systemic corruption. And you've heard how Qatar won the rights to host the biggest sporting event in the world, and how that sketchy vote led to the indictments of dozens of soccer officials in 2015. But with the first match of the 2022 World Cup just months away, I want to explain to you, in detail, what that 2010 selection of Qatar is doing to some of the poorest people in the world, and why a desert country, smaller than the state of Connecticut with scorching hot temperatures and no modern FIFA-quality soccer stadiums whatsoever, has turned out to be an awful, dare I say, immoral choice to host the World Cup, and how FIFA's decision to award the tournament to Qatar shows FIFA hasn't learned its lessons. As the organization continues to exhibit an almost total disregard for human rights and basic decency. It's a clever commercial. It plays on every emotion a sports fan has, weaving in and out, in between the legs of dozens of grown adults. A young boy in jean shorts with ratty white sneakers skillfully maneuvers a tattered soccer ball across the bone-dry dirt floor of a public market. He encounters a conveniently placed set of mirrors. He leans in to steal a glimpse of his own reflection. But instead of seeing himself, the young soccer player sees the beaming smile of the Argentine superstar Lionel Messi, looking right back at him.
Sabía lo que tenía que hacer.
The essence and allure of this television commercial is pretty obvious. No matter what language you speak or where you come from, you could be the next Messi. This slick commercial, just one of many that ran across Africa in the last decade, was produced and paid for by Qatar's Aspire Academy.
The Aspire Zone is a world-class destination for sports excellence and has some of the world's finest sporting stadiums and venues, where we offer unparalleled opportunities for athlete development, education, and the making of champions.
With its distinctive sloping sapphire blue roof, Qatar's massive 13-story tall Aspire Dome Stadium can be seen from miles away. At nearly 1.3 million square feet, that's more than twice the area covered by the Superdome in New Orleans, Aspire is a state-of-the-art sports training complex created to produce the next generation of world-class soccer players.
This place is astounding. I mean, even the top clubs in the world like Manchester United and Bayern Munich often go train there, and they're astounded by the facilities.
That's journalist Sebastian Abbott, author of The Away Game, The Epic Search for Soccer's Next Superstars, which is all about sport in Qatar. The Aspire Academy, he said, is not only the largest indoor sporting complex in the world, it also reflects and embodies Tiny Qatar's global ambitions.
There's a joke that Qatar is really just a family business with a seat at the United Nations, because it's basically the family wealth of the royal family.
Qatar, or more specifically its royal family, led by the Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, is determined to use its seemingly infinite wealth to establish the Gulf nation as a major player on the world stage. While its neighbors, Dubai and Abu Dhabi, have tapped their vast resources to become commercial and financial hubs, Qatar has tried to transform its oil and gas fortune into political and athletic power.
They've used that cash in all sorts of ways to try and, you know, increase their standing on the world stage. You can sort of understand it from their perspective, because if you're a tiny little country like they are, how else are you going to throw your weight around?
Long before Qatar was awarded the 2022 World Cup, the Emir's brother, Sheikh Jassim, a massive soccer fan who built a lush, regulation-sized soccer field at his palace in Doha, set out to accomplish what seemed an impossible task: to elevate Qatar's national soccer team into the upper echelons of the sport. Qatar's national soccer team is anything but a powerhouse. It's never come close to qualifying for a World Cup, and is consistently ranked in the bottom half of FIFA's international tables. With a native population of just 300,000 or so citizens, Qatar doesn't have the depth to field a native team that can compete in its own regional soccer tournaments, let alone the World Cup. What it lacks in players, however, it more than makes up for in financial resources. After spending a reported $1 billion constructing the Aspire Academy complex, Qatar launched a massive worldwide search for young soccer players. They started at home in Qatar and found few quality prospects. So Qatar set its sights on Africa, home to 1 billion people. I hate to say it so crassly, but in Africa, Qatar found people passionate about soccer who were too poor to pass up the opportunity. Beginning in 2007, backed by slick TV commercials featuring Messi and armed with free Nike gear to pass out to hopeful stars in the making, Aspire Academy scouts began combing through the dusty and dirt soccer pitches of Morocco, Cameroon, Ghana, Kenya, Nigeria, Senegal, and South Africa. In the last decade alone, more than 5 million young boys have tried out for Qatar's Aspire Academy. Here's Sebastian Abbott.
They're such a small nation that, yeah, how else are they going to compete on the world stage unless they can tap players from other countries? They were scouting 13-year-old boys, so would find these young kids, bring them to Qatar, have them live in Doha at Aspire Academy, train them, and eventually give them passports and have them play for the Qatar national team.
To succeed in athletics, Qatar has long recruited outside talent.
Qatar does have a long history of basically paying foreigners to become Qatari nationals and compete for Qatar in sports, in the Olympics and otherwise. I mean, they've done it in everything from weightlifting to ping pong to chess, and they've done it in soccer as well.
In 2003, the Kenyan steeplechase runner Stephen Chirono accepted Qatari citizenship in exchange for $1,000 a month. A few years later, Qatar offered three Brazilian soccer players $1 million each to become Qatari citizens, in hopes they'd help the tiny peninsula nation to qualify for the World Cup. The plan didn't work. Now, Qatar isn't alone. It is a fairly common practice to recruit outside talent. It's done by many countries, including the United States. But recruiting children, some as young as 13, it's not only uncommon, it's downright sketchy.
You hadn't ever really in history had a country go and conduct a massive talent search like this across a place like Africa, searching for players for its national team. And so it's sort of unprecedented.
Even though, by all accounts, the Aspire Academy is a top-notch training program with state-of-the-art medical and educational facilities, the practice of recruiting young athletes set off alarm bells, not only with European sports columnists and human rights groups, but also within FIFA, which we know, you know, historically, they don't seem overly concerned with human rights.
They got a lot of criticism from folks internationally that they basically kind of like harvesting Africa's best young players to nationalize them, which didn't go over well with a lot of folks.
Not long after Qatar launched the Aspire program, FIFA changed its eligibility rules, making it harder for young players to switch nationalities.
They'd never sort of openly admitted that that was definitely their plan, although at the beginning they said we were open to these kids becoming Qatari players, but they eventually changed their tune and say, no, these players will play for their own national teams. It definitely continued to be controversial because a lot of people continued to suspect that even though Qatar was saying these kids wouldn't represent Qatar, that somehow Qatar would find a way to have them do that.
For many years, FIFA's president Sepp Blatter was critical of Qatar's player harvesting. Qatar stealing the best players from Africa meant the home teams weren't as strong. And the Confederation of African Football, they didn't like that. Remember, Blatter, like his predecessor João Havelange, saw Africa as his base of support. Both of them won a lot of FIFA elections keeping the legal and the illegal money flowing to African countries. Then in 2008, Blatter visited Qatar, and the trip, says Sebastian Abbott, led him to have a change of heart.
Blatter changed his tune and became very supportive of Football Dreams and Aspire. And on that trip in 2008, reportedly said to the Emir of Qatar, we're going to bring the World Cup to Qatar.
And 2 years later, FIFA did just that. From a distance, Doha's Abdullah bin Jassim Street just seems to disappear and becomes a stunning turquoise blue body of water. No, it's not a desert mirage caused by Qatar's legendary summer heat. Instead, several hundred meters of the busy downtown road was painted blue in 2019 in an experiment to reflect the sun's rays and reduce the city's overall temperature. Known to reach highs of 120 degrees Fahrenheit, cracking car dashboards and melting plastic trim. To state the obvious, Qatar is a climate that makes playing soccer outside in the summer impossible, even with the streets painted blue.
Summer temperatures in Qatar can reach some 50 degrees Celsius, a difficult environment to hold a professional sporting event outdoors.
The idea of staging the World Cup in the desert has been contentious since its announcement.
FIFA's own inspection team, after visiting Qatar in 2010, called the oppressive heat a potential health risk.
A country that is 105 degrees in the summer, a country that had virtually no infrastructure at all as far as soccer stadiums, this just made absolutely no sense for them to win the bid.
We now know Qatar bribed a lot of people to win the 2022 World Cup. But the wealthy Gulf nation also made a lot of promises to FIFA before that 2010 vote, and now they've got to be reconciled. The lack of modern FIFA-style stadiums, event infrastructure, and Qatar's searing heat were all seen back in 2010 as significant challenges that would prevent FIFA from awarding a summer tournament to Qatar. Qatar acknowledged its potential shortcomings and promised a, quote, novel approach to the summer event, and pointed to the Aspire Academy as proof it could design massive sporting facilities in the desert. It promised mitigations.
Money will be thrown at the problem, and the heat will be overcome by technology. But the Qataris are promising carbon neutral, air-cooled stadiums, training facilities, and fan areas. Energy will be supplied by solar power.
With money seemingly not an issue, the CEO of Qatar's World Cup bid, Hassan Al-Thawadi, promised to build 12 new state-of-the-art temperature-controlled stadiums, and to avoid the mistakes of previous World Cup hosts like Brazil, who built stadiums that languished and bled communities dry when the tournament ended. Here's Sheikh Hassan Al-Thawadi making his case.
The Qatari government has guaranteed $4 billion to cover the costs of our 12 stunning football-specific state-of-the-art stadiums. After 2022, we will dismantle the modular elements of our stadiums and reconfigure a total of 170,000 seats to create up to 22 new stadiums in developing nations.
But 4 years after FIFA awarded Qatar the 2022 World Cup, the wealthy Gulf Kingdom began backtracking as the logistics of a summer tournament became untenable. First to go, the number of stadiums they promised, which was cut from 12 down to 8. And then they radically altered the traditional summer schedule of the tournament.
After much debate and deliberation, FIFA confirmed a Winter World Cup for Qatar in 2022, which will run from November to December.
The temperatures will still be uncomfortable in the winter, but doable with air conditioning, if it, you know, all works. However, moving the tournament to avoid the worst of Qatar's heat also puts players' safety at risk and wreaks havoc on soccer's lucrative professional leagues, like Italy's La Liga, Germany's Bundesliga, the UK's Premier League, and even America's own MLS. They all will be forced to shut down mid-season for about 6 weeks.
The tournament schedule is different this time, as there will be 4 games every day during the group stage, a first in World Cup history.
To try to accommodate the many professional leagues that will be impacted by this unusual Winter World Cup, FIFA has had to reduce the number of days in the tournament. Normally, a 32-team World Cup will be played over the course of 32 days. During the 2018 Russia World Cup, players had about 4 to 5 days off between games. But with Qatar's shortened schedule, the games will be played over a compressed 28 days.
Most teams will get 3 days off between games, but in the knockout stage, some will only get 2 days of recovery.
This will be the shortest tournament since 1978, when there are only 16 teams competing, meaning the very best players in the world are being forced to play with reduced recovery times between matches. Many players will then immediately return to their domestic leagues, jumping right back into the rigors of professional soccer, with little chance to rest. Oh, and the COVID-19 pandemic has completely rearranged the qualifying part of the 2022 World Cup, making things even more difficult. Sure, these athletes are all professionals who make a ton of money, travel by private jets, and stay in 5-star hotels. But FIFA, which, let's remember, is supposedly, you know, all about the good of the game, is forcing the world's best players to put an unprecedented strain on their bodies. It's conceivable Qatar's World Cup will be one of the most injury-riddled tournaments ever. However, as problematic and dangerous as the Qatar World Cup will be for players, it's nothing, and I mean it is nothing, compared to the horrors FIFA and Qatar have unleashed on the people building the World Cup infrastructure.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
It was late March 2021. Norway's best players nervously looked at each other as they walked out under the night's lights and onto the green soccer pitch.
Please rise for the national anthem of Norway.
With slight nods of their head and sly glances of support, one by one, they peeled off their red warm-up jackets. Wrapping their arms around each other's shoulders, they unveiled their message as their anthem played. All 11 starters of Norway's national soccer team, before their 2022 World Cup qualifying match against Gibraltar, wore the same white cotton t-shirt. Emblazoned across their chest was the phrase, "Human rights, on and off the pitch." Norway's statement of protest was only the first. The next night, Germany's national side took the pitch with the phrase "human rights" spelled out in large, white block letters on their black shirts. Then Denmark made a plea. Their target? Qatar. Specifically, its abysmal human rights record and brutal treatment of migrant workers. For the last decade, FIFA has ignored calls to strip the World Cup from Qatar. Here's FIFA President Sepp Blatter in 2013, who did everything in his power to avoid even talking about the corrupt 2010 vote and the growing concerns human rights groups had expressed about the rush to build a tournament in the desert.
The decision taken by the executive committee in October that there is not one single doubt that the World Cup 2022 will be organized in Qatar. Decision taken by the executive committee on the 2nd of December 2010 and not reversible.
Today, FIFA is led by longtime soccer executive Gianni Infantino, who replaced Blatter after the godfather of soccer was booted out of office in 2015. After Norway and the other teams voiced their protest in the spring of 2021, FIFA, under Infantino, issued a statement saying the players would not be punished and that FIFA believed in freedom of speech and the power of soccer to be a force for good. Whether the sport under FIFA's watch is a force for good is still very much up for debate. That soccer and the World Cup are a force? Of that, there is no doubt. One only has to look at Qatar's ever-transforming landscape, with its endless tangle of new roads and metro tracks, glistening skyscrapers, and massive steel stadiums, all built at an unimaginable cost.
Work is progressing on Qatar's World Cup venues, but Amnesty International says improvements to migrant worker rights are not progressing fast enough.
Long before European soccer players began protesting Qatar's treatment of migrant workers, groups like Amnesty International and the International Trade Union Confederation were pushing for new laws and worker protections. Qatar has made improvements, but the conservative Arab Kingdom and FIFA have rejected accusations that the thousands of workers who died were building World Cup infrastructure.
The headline that came out of The Guardian was inherently misleading.
That's Hassan Al-Thawadi, the CEO of Qatar's World Cup Organizing Committee. He insists the reports of thousands of deaths lack context.
6,500 workers did not die on World Cup stadiums. If we're looking at specifically at World Cup stadiums, we have had, unfortunately, 3 work-related deaths and 35 non-work-related deaths.
Frankly, it's Al-Thawadi's argument that lacks context. He doesn't explain how the other 6,500 workers died, and he doesn't even address the thousands of bodies leaving Qatar and arriving in African and Asian airports. You see, Qatar and FIFA only want to count the fatalities directly related to construction of new stadiums and training facilities. But those are only a small part of the building going on to support the World Cup.
The construction in Qatar is booming. Dozens of projects, including 7 stadiums, roads, hotels, and even a new airport, have been completed or are underway.
It is these projects, say human rights groups like Amnesty International and The Guardian newspaper, that have killed thousands.
Since Qatar won the right to host the World Cup for 2022, back in 2010, all this development, construction, expansion is because of the World Cup.
That's Mustafa Kadri, executive director of Equidem Research, which advocates for the labor rights of migrant workers. He's done reporting for Amnesty International about Qatar and the World Cup. He says the Qatari World Cup Organizing Committee and FIFA have overlooked all of the construction projects built to support the World Cup when releasing their official death count.
It's all related. They're building this massive railway system, new hotels are being built, new public spaces, shopping malls. It's really obvious that all of this is connected. So this idea that you can somehow isolate what happens within the World Cup from everything outside it is simply just nonsensical.
Qatar intentionally keeps the death records of migrant workers vague, issuing death certificates with ambiguous descriptions like natural causes or cardiac failure. Many death certificates simply say the cause of death is unknown. Remember, these are mostly young and healthy men that Qatar imports to work. Statistically, this isn't an age group that should be dying of natural causes or cardiac failure. Unless, of course, they're forced to work in unsafe environments like the insanely hot temperatures in Qatar. And really, why isn't Qatar doing more to investigate these deaths? Sharon Burrow, the International Trade Union Confederation's General Secretary, didn't hold back when asked about Qatar's brutal working conditions.
Qatar is a slave state in the 21st century.
Even when the construction projects don't kill the workers, they're still forced to live under barbaric conditions. And for most of the last decade, FIFA couldn't have cared less.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's in treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Doha's glass and steel Al Bida Tower is famous for its vertical, twisting design. It's long symbolized Qatar's march to a more modern future. Even today, as it's been joined by dozens of other newer structures, the iconic building sticks out on Doha's skyline. When the 2022 World Cup Organizing Committee was looking for office space about a decade ago, the Al Bida Tower was the obvious choice. From its 38th and 39th floors, Qatar's soccer bosses developed the early blueprints for the first ever tournament in the Middle East. As much of a beacon for development as the Al Bida Tower is for Qataris, it also represents the callousness and inhumane system that underpins Qatar's march of progress and the 2022 World Cup.
Some of the men who built these offices have become victims of serious labor exploitation.
You see, back in 2012, just as planning for the World Cup was ramping up, it came out that many of the migrant workers who built the sleek new Al Bida Tower were basically living as modern slaves.
They went unpaid for over a year. They were abandoned by their employer and left to live in squalor.
That's from a Guardian newspaper report. Qatar's government, including its prime minister, knew of the situation and for months did nothing. In fact, the treatment of Al Bida's workers is hardly unique. Many migrant workers in Qatar live in horrible conditions.
After a 12-hour workday, this is the sort of home they return to. Overcrowded compounds, often 12 men to a room, and minimal bathroom facilities.
Here again is Mustafa Kadri, who spent years investigating labor practices in the Middle East.
The only way to describe them is appalling. You're talking about often these completely broken down, sort of Soviet-era looking, very concrete apartment blocks with unwashed walls or very dirty walls, with no one coming to clean. The ground is very filthy, often with toilets, which might have cubicles with no doors, with broken sinks, with terrible smells, kitchens, which are really infested with insects. When you go to these sites, the first thing that really comes to mind is it feels like a prison. You've got these gated areas, there's security, you have to check in. When you go to work accommodations, there's often bars around their windows. There are very clear sort of boundaries. And it's also that the sense of physical enclosure is really, really strong.
This life of squalor and indentured servitude isn't unique to Qatar. It's the norm across the entire Middle East for migrant workers, and has been so for decades.
Qatar and other Arab Gulf states developed a system called kafala, meaning sponsorship, to bring in workers from around the world.
Businesses like, I don't know, say a firm building World Cup infrastructure, uses third-party agents to lure workers from poor countries. And then the construction firm sponsors the workers' employment in a country like Qatar. On the surface, it seems like a win-win.
These workers get hooked on this belief, this idea that their life can be better.
The firms get healthy, young workers, and desperate families get a shot at a better life.
You're 18 years old, so there's increasing pressure from your family to get married, to have children like your elder brother or your relatives that are older than you. And you don't really see many opportunities in your home country. And they'll really win them over with these stories of these amazing opportunities. And that over a short period of time, you'll be sending over so much money that you'll eventually have enough money for a dowry or to have a wedding and have children and all that sort of a thing. but they have to go far away and they have to pay really large sums of money, but it's worth it. It's almost like getting a mortgage on a house. You know, when you're young, you sort of wonder how on earth will you pay off that mortgage, but you kind of feel eventually you'll pay off that loan and what you'll have at the end of it is an asset. In their case, the asset is a job, is money they can send home and a better prospect of life. So that's how they get hooked in.
What recruiters don't mention are the feces-smeared bathrooms, the 12-hour days under the hot Gulf sun, or the fact that workers' residency rights are tied to the job. This is Minky Warden of Human Rights Watch and Jeremy Schapp of ESPN.
If your employer is abusive or forces you to work long hours, forces you to live in squalid conditions, there's really nothing you can do about it.
A migrant worker can't leave the country without an exit visa. That visa has to be approved by his employer.
No matter how callous, inhumane, or just plain awful the company is, this inability to switch jobs leaves workers vulnerable to exploitation.
The winner to organize the 2022 FIFA World Cup is Qatar.
Long before Sepp Blatter announced Qatar as the 2022 World Cup host, the kafala system's immoral hazards were well documented. Here's Qatari Sheikh Mohammed bin Hamad Al Thani admitting as much back in 2013.
I said previously this workers' welfare issue has come about long before we were awarded the hosting rights. We've had a tremendous amount of workers in Qatar for the past 15 to 20 years.
FIFA executives knew way before 2010 that a World Cup in Qatar would require a massive infrastructure program, one the likes of the soccer world had never seen before. And that meant a huge number of workers would be sent to Qatar to work under deplorable conditions. Knowing this, FIFA and Sepp Blatter did what they always do, look the other way.
As far as FIFA is concerned, the onus is on the companies that employ the laborers.
Last year, FIFA's president said workers are the responsibility of the companies who hire them, not of FIFA.
From the beginning, FIFA sloughed off any responsibility. Here's Sepp Blatter in 2015 when asked about worker treatment.
I know many people hold me ultimately responsible for the actions and reputation of the global football community. We, or I, cannot monitor everyone all of the time.
FIFA keeps insisting there isn't much it can do about the treatment of migrant workers and their deaths.
FIFA benefits from these environments where scrutiny is highly limited. And yet publicly, when there is some scrutiny and there's exposure of all the bad things that is made public, we'll say, well, we don't have control. Well, it can't both be right.
Of course, with things FIFA really cares about, no organization is more aggressive or demanding. Remember Brazil and its ban on alcohol?
In 2003, the Brazilian government banned alcohol from stadiums because of the enormously high death rate amongst fans.
Before the 2014 World Cup, FIFA drew a line in the sand and demanded Brazil change its laws to permit beer sales in stadiums.
I'm sorry to say, and maybe I look a bit arrogant, but that's something we'll not negotiate. I mean, there will be, and there must be, as part of the law, the fact that we have the right to sell beer.
FIFA has forced government after government after government to bend to its will and change tax laws to ensure FIFA rakes in every single shiny penny it can.
It is FIFA and its FIFA subsidiaries that are fully exempt from any tax whatsoever levied at whatever level, state level, municipality level, all sorts of taxes, consumption taxes, income taxes, you name it, it's all exempt.
When it comes to human rights, FIFA claims it's powerless. But FIFA has pushed for changes when it comes to money, Kadri says.
We know when it comes to other things like sponsorship rights, when it comes to the requirements for the tournament stadiums, when it comes to all those things around the financial, the corporate, the professional side for FIFA, then in fact you see that Qatar has bent over backwards to accommodate them.
FIFA's position on Qatar's migrant workers has come at a cost, an avalanche, no, a volcano of bad press.
A tournament built, moreover, on the blood of foreign construction workers, the other great FIFA scandal. The ugly game. For years, major sponsors have watched the Qatar World Cup descend into accusations of corruption and appalling labor conditions as the deaths of construction workers pile up.
With endless scrutiny from human rights groups and Sepp Blatter's departure in 2015, FIFA's new president, Gianni Infantino, has, and I'll give him a little bit of credit here, has called for improved worker conditions.
We put it as a condition in our bidding processes for all our competitions. And wherever we go around the world, we are, of course, highlighting the need for protecting human rights. When it comes to the situation in Qatar in particular, I think we need to be fair there as well and admit that a lot of progress has happened. A lot of progress in the conditions of the workers.
In recent years, with a very soft nudge from FIFA, Qatar passed legislation revamping its employment system. In theory, workers can now switch jobs without leaving the country. A new minimum monthly salary is guaranteed and must be paid electronically. And employers must provide suitable food and accommodations or pay extra if they don't. But here's the rub. Enforcement of all of these new laws is haphazard at best. Even with these changes, the mistreatment of workers continues in Qatar. Thousands of migrant workers are still being exploited and too many are dying. There's no denying the 2022 World Cup will be the most technologically advanced World Cup ever. With its estimated $300 billion of futuristic stadiums and transportation infrastructure, it will be a modern marvel. At the same time, it's a modern human tragedy. FIFA can do better. FIFA has to do better. This is a postscript. The red blood on the brick wall is fake, but the bullet holes are very much real. The 6x10-foot section of the Lincoln Park garage, where seven Irish bootleggers were murdered by Al Capone's Southside Chicago gang on Valentine's Day 1929, just one of the some 2,000 rare artifacts and exhibits in the Las Vegas Mob Museum. The wall, like many other exhibits, helps tell the story of the world's most notorious gangsters and organized crime syndicates. You know, the jewel thieves, the cyber hackers, the Irish and Italian mobsters, the Mexican drug cartels, and the international soccer executives.
This may not fit the perfect picture of organized crime, but it looks like it, it feels like it, you know, it tastes like it.
That's right. Among the many criminals and crooks profiled and enshrined in the Las Vegas Mob Museum, there's a little corner reserved for the Federation Internationale de Football Association, FIFA. Jeff Schumacher, the vice president of exhibits at the museum, says FIFA ticks all the boxes for a continuing criminal enterprise.
From our standpoint, 20 years is a pretty good run for a criminal enterprise. I think some people who came into the museum may have been surprised to come across our FIFA exhibit. But once they absorbed the contents of the exhibit, once they read about what had transpired, and they saw how the European press in particular had covered the FIFA scandal, I think they understood why it was a logical fit for the museum.
As you've heard in this series, FIFA's sometimes criminal, immoral, and horrendous behavior isn't just centered around one person or the 2015 corruption case. FIFA started as a racist organization under its European colonial-minded founders and then became a full-fledged criminal enterprise under its boss, João Havelange, in the 1970s. Its criminality only grew and expanded under the mild-mannered Sepp Blatter. In the last 50 years, the men who have run FIFA have coddled right-wing military juntas, turned a blind eye to gross human rights abuses, encouraged rampant sexism and vulgar misogyny, and oversaw a global system of money laundering, bribery, and financial misdeeds. Today, FIFA would like you to believe that corruption, the sexism, the racism, the canoodling with authoritarian regimes, it's all a thing of the past. A historical legacy of those other, let's not talk about them, they're gone now, FIFA leaders. But the U.S. Justice Department and Swiss prosecutors continue to issue indictments against FIFA and world soccer executives. In 2020, among those indicted were two former senior sports executives from 21st Century Fox. And in November of 2021, as you heard, Sepp Blatter and former UEFA President Michel Platini were indicted in Switzerland, though a Swiss judge has since thrown the indictment out. Today, Gianni Infantino, current FIFA president, is under investigation by European authorities. So while the names have changed, FIFA really hasn't. Billions of people, including myself, will watch the World Cup in 2022. Many of us will think about the time we played the game as children. We'll put ourselves in the cleats of our favorite player. We'll be kids again, on that grass pitch, that patch of dirt, just kicking the ball around. We will not think about those men in their finely tailored suits, grabbing envelopes of cash in exchange for a crooked vote. But imagine if FIFA did what it said it should. Imagine if it used the power and passion for the beautiful game to make a better world. Maybe this podcast will be a small part of a much larger effort to bring about some meaningful reforms. As Mustafa Kadri told me,
if sport is meant to be a public good, if it's meant to be a community activity, if it's meant to be ours, then we have to democratize it. It has to represent us. It has to represent our values. It can't just be a vehicle for making money.
I believe there's hope. The indictments, the success of women's soccer, the growing voice of players speaking out against human rights violations. There's hope as long as a child somewhere, anywhere in the world, kicks a ball and starts to play the beautiful game. The Lords of Soccer, How FIFA Stole the Beautiful Game, is an Inside Voices Media production in conjunction with iHeartRadio. The series was written and executive produced by Gary Scott and me, Connor Powell. Logan Heftel and Katie McMurrin provided the sound design with assistance from JC Swadek and Jake Bluenote. Alec Cowan is our associate producer, and Jeffrey Katz was our story editor. Our fact checker is Alexa O'Brien. And thanks to Miles Gray, who produced this series for iHeartRadio. If you have any comments or questions, please reach out. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Connor M. Powell, and Gary is at Gary Robert Scott. And if you have any stories about FIFA, let us know. If you like what you hear, please give us a shout out at the hashtag Lords of Soccer.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, starting May 6th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.